I'll go ahead and get started. My name is Keith Williamson. I'm with industry. I'm with Guardian Ag Plastics, which is a subsidiary of Covaris, which is a large packaging company out of Chicago. And we make plastic that is used in mostly in plastic mulch. There'll be discussions here. We also make banana bags for Latin America and twine for hay baling and for stringing up tomatoes and peppers. And also, but we are in agricultural plastics. That's the main thrust of our business. Covaris, our parent company, is in plastics in packaging and also some paper packaging as well. A little bit about the Plasticulture Group, because I see some people here who are familiar with the history of our group and some who are new. I'll see if I can make this work here. This group, the Plasticulture Group, goes back 50 years to an organization that became known as American Society of Plasticulture. And primarily the use of plastics in horticulture, which is, of course, a subject that we are interested in here. And I think all of you know the miracles that plastic has brought to horticulture in terms of production, yield, quality, water conservation, fertilizer conservation. All of those things are well known to most of the people in horticulture. But one of an Achilles heel has been the disposal of plastic. And that's what we'll get into now. But this group, from its onset, when I first joined it 25 years ago, and it was interested in recycling at that time. And we've continued to be interested in recycling, and you'll hear some of the stories of that today. It's rather unique in the horticultural society and also in trade groups, and it is a joint group of industry and academia. And that allows us to sort of cross-pollinate the ideas that come from industry, which have to do with product introduction and sale, and ideas from academia, which have to do with the actual production, breeding, and raising of the crops. And so we have industry people, like some of them represented here, who represent companies who either have plastic or have ingredients that go into the plastic that make it perform as the growers would like. And this cooperative approach of sharing knowledge and solving problems has worked over the years. But one that has been tough for us is the recycling of used plastics. But you'll hear some of the advances that have been made in this area. I think it's pretty obvious the importance of recycling our used plastics. If just from a stewardship point of view, but also from a regulatory point of view, I think you can see down the road that government will be more involved in what happens to used plastics, particularly thin films. You're probably aware of the bans on thin grocery sacks, which is very close kin to the material that's used in plastic mulch. In both cases, the product itself performs very well. It's the after effect, the littering, and in the case of plastic mulch, the trash or buildup that sometimes happens in the soil, and also the occupation of space in our landfills. So that the recycling of used plastics is a headache for the growers. It's an expense for the growers. And it's also, I think, down the road, going to become more of a government mandate for the growers. At least in forms that are a little different now, in forms where the plastic has been burned in the field or disposed of on the farm. I think those mandates are already upon us. And then the mandates about landfills are probably not too far down the road and already in some areas. And the mandates toward recycling will probably follow those. We certainly don't want a ban like the grocery bag people are facing. And I don't think we will, because it doesn't have quite the high profile that a grocery bag has. But it can, in certain areas, it can probably be a source of bad will between the agricultural community and the rest of the community. So I think we should consider recycling very seriously as an industry. And myself as a manufacturer and others here as industry people who also have ingredients to go into plastic, and also as horticulturists, which many of you are, because the livelihood of our businesses and our jobs depends on successfully using agricultural plastics. So with that overview, I'm going to give you one example, a case study, of the disposal of agricultural plastics for energy. And I would consider that a recycling into another use, which is BTUs, or heat. And I'm going to use the case study, and I'll run through this rather quickly, of fuel and production cement in Guatemala. Just a little bit about Guatemala. There's a concentrated usage in the Zacapa region with about 15,000 acres of melons, cantaloupes, and honeydews, or about 2.5 million pounds of used film. And pay attention to these factors, because many of them parallel what's going on here in the United States. There's a lack of alternative disposal options. In that case, the landfills are not close by, so there's a problem of getting to landfills. And in the farms of the size that they can't store it on the farm because farms are too big, and that's certainly the case in our country here in the U.S. And some other factors that also parallel what could happen or is happening in the U.S. is the government got involved in eliminating unauthorized or illegal dumping or storing in the field or burning in open air. And the growers, this is something I have not seen so much here in the U.S., but there's a possibility. I'm trying to think. Maybe some of the other speakers can. They took the initiative. They took it to the suppliers and said, if you're going to supply me, you've got to take it back. And so as a supplier, which I was and still am, my company at the time, agreed to do that, not knowing exactly what we were going to do with it. And to my co-worker, he said, what are we going to do with it? I said, we got 11 months to figure that out. And so you do have a little bit of lead time. You've got one season worth. And so they came up, the growers united, and said, all the large growers in Guatemala, those are the Del Montes and those type, corporate farms in Guatemala, came with those with that mandate. And we, as one of the suppliers, agreed to accept that. And so the first thing we had to decide was how are we going to handle it. So we needed to come up with some balers or some way of compacting it. And then we need to come up with some way to dispose of it legally. And so we had a contract, a binding contract. And then we brought some balers down that we had developed in the U.S. And we brought them down to Guatemala so that we could at least get it off the farm. And then maybe we could buy a little more time in deciding exactly what to do with it. Again, parallel to some of the situations here in the U.S. We looked at using it as a fuel source for limestone kilns, which is made to make whitewash, which is used in a lot in the Latin America and southern climates. And legally, of course, was a municipal landfill. And so, but we made contact with a cement company, and just because I don't have permission to use their name, I don't, but it's the largest cement company in Guatemala, and it's part of an international consortium. So it would be easy for you to find that out if you want. And they were located reasonably close to the large growing area, but they had handling issues. They didn't know how to handle this stuff once it came in, and they expected to be paid because they figured they were doing a service that needed to be paid for. But the breakthrough with the cement company is that the economics then, this was a few years ago, changed much as the price of oil started to move up. And so they saw, the cement company in Guatemala, saw the potential savings of about $2 million a year. So they went and installed shredding and handling, put in shredders, and as I'll show you in a few pictures in a few minutes, they bagged them into large plastic bags, and so they could feed the whole bag into the kiln. And in addition to not charging, they agreed to actually pay for the freight from the field to the cement plant, which they are continuing to do. So the cement company came around and worked with the growers to make it work. They have also expanded their operations, and they are setting up collection points throughout Guatemala, although I don't think those have really materialized quite yet. But they are putting more capacity in for handling the used plastics. Now, these are the balers that were transported from the U.S. and are still being used, some from over 20 years ago, the same balers being used in Guatemala. You see that it arrives on a big truck. It's then shredded into pieces about, you know, 2 foot square, sort of, in that line. Not small pieces, as some recyclers. And then they're placed in these large polypropylene bags, and then they're thrown into the kiln. They're ferried into the kiln by an elevator. And so it's what I would call a win-win-win. The cement company is saving money on fuel. The growers are saving money on disposal, and the environment is better protected. So that's one case study of recycling that has not been a flash in the pan. It has actually occurred and is continuing to occur. Just a little bit of a summary here is that the different parties, growers, manufacturers, government, industry, cooperated, and they all took some risks. The growers risked some by demanding of the suppliers, and the manufacturers took risk of of taking on the demand, and the industry took some risk of putting in capital expenditures. This, as Gene Jones will tell you later, probably, but anyway, some of these efforts have been replicated here in the U.S., but there also have been other recycling efforts aimed more at taking the plastic into different forms than energy. Just a little bit of update. Last year I gave a talk at a conference Gene put on where I said if oil, which was right at $100 a barrel at that time, dropped to $80 a barrel, I would see problems for recyclers. It's now below $50 a barrel, below $45 a barrel just recently. So keep in mind that I think it's a fairly easy economic analysis that you have to sell your finished product against virgin pellets or against coal if you're going to use it for fuel. And if you sell that product against one of these competitive resources, products, if the price of that product drops, then the price of your product is going to drop. In the case of pellets, you sell at a discount usually to virgin, so the discount drops you down when it goes from down by 20 cents or something like that. On the other hand, your cost, which is the capital equipment that you put in, the transportation, the labor, those things have not dropped by 50% as oil has. So your costs remain fairly stable and your selling price drops. That's not a good proposition for a business. Now, will oil stay in the $50 range? Actually, it looks like it will for a while. All the reports and the developments. But then we didn't think that it would go from 100 to 50 this time last year. So we don't know, but that's a big factor. And in the short term, it does put pressure on recyclers. It did it years ago when oil dropped, and previous big drop of oil, I guess it was in the 90s, late 80s. And so when oil drops, recyclers are pinched. But I will say the ones that they have put in the capital structure, such as this cement company, have continued because they still see a use for the plastic. Now, how long that'll last if they have to put in additional capital equipment and all, we don't know. So that I would say that the drop in oil prices, and the gas prices have not dropped quite as dramatically. They are low, you know, $4 a thousand BTU, but the oil prices are putting a real pressure on recyclers.